Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining me, and welcome to episode 2 of So Let's Talk Horror. I'm your host, Chris McAfee, and this week's highlighted movie title is The Beach House, which is a Shudder original. The release date, according to IMDb, was wrapped in 2019, but it was released July this month, 2020. The general synopsis of the movie, we open with a very timely story of a young collegiate couple that's working through a rather turbulent spot in the relationship as they attempt to stop the clock on everyday life and turning to the boyfriend Randall's family's beach house for an off-season stint to work through those problems and, with any luck, have some fun. During this, they quickly find a bit of a surprise in that they have more company than they originally bargained for. Soon this getaway turns struggle for survival when a surrounding environment radically changes as a result of a mysterious infection. So, with that, I'll jump into the writer-director of this fine film is a Jeffrey A. Brown. He worked in production for 20 years prior to this debut, and this is his directorial debut, and a very good one, I might add. So he noted on writing the script, he stated that when he wrote the script, he centered the story around a personal experience where a trip to Cape Cod resulted in ending a relationship with a woman that he had been dating. And then he wove, interwove through this storyline his deep affection for 1950s era science fiction, which I thought was pretty cool. So that's how this thing came to be. Producers on this film, executives, producers would be Dexter Braff, Kevin Flanagan, and Susan Warbill. And the filming location, this was shot, there was several more producers on the film outside of those three that I noted, but the film was shot at producer Andrew Corkin's father's residence in Cape Cod during the off-season, which is pretty notable. So getting into the major billing of the cast, we have four main players in this film, four main roles, and in no particular order, I'm going to start with Jane, of the older couple in the movie. But Jane is played by Mary Ann Nagle, who's known for this movie exclusively. Her husband, Mitch, though, is one Jake Weber. And, you know, the funny thing about him, he was really familiar looking, and I knew I had seen him in a bunch of different things. He just had that face that kind of stuck with me. And then it took a minute, but it finally hit me, and it hit me straight away, actually. See, he played Drew in the movie 1998's Meet Joe Black, opposite Brad Pitt and Anthony Hopkins, which is a really wonderful film if you haven't seen that. And I'd highly recommend checking that out. But yeah, he played a great role in that. He was also Michael in Zack Snyder's 2004 remake of Dawn of the Dead, which was obviously very notable. So, and then moving through some of his filmography, I haven't seen this one, but I'm excited to check this out. It's on my radar now. He played George in Larry Fessenden's 2001 feature Wendigo, which I had heard about, and I definitely have to go seek that one. And then he played Gordon Ramsay to follow up in 2000's The Cell, which I had forgotten about. So those were primarily a lot of horror titles in his filmography. I was pretty impressed by that, minus Meet Joe Black. But yeah, he's always played some really strong, great roles, and has done a wonderful job in all of them, in my opinion. So he's really excellent in this as well. Moving into our younger couple, played by, well, we have Emily and Randall. And Randall, the boyfriend, is played by Noah LaGrosse, son of James LaGrosse. And in his filmography, he played most recent a smaller role as Soldier Adam in Larry Fessenden's 2019, his most recent feature titled Depraved. And Depraved is a really, really excellent movie. If you haven't seen it, I'd highly recommend checking that out. It is basically a very original take on the Frankenstein story, and yeah, it's quite excellent, quite good. So that's a fun one. And then he played a role as Joey also in 2019, Sean Coo's film A Score to Settle, opposite Nicolas Cage and Benjamin Bratt. I have not seen that, so that's on my list of things to do as well. I wouldn't mind checking that out. And then moving into Emily's character is played by Aliana Liberato, and she is pretty exceptional in this one, this movie. And going through her filmography, some of the movie titles that she was noted for, one being If I Stay, which is non-horror related. It's directed by an R.J. Cutler, 2014. She plays Kim. And then she has a role as Annie in David Schwimmer's 2010 feature, Trust, opposite Clive Owen and Catherine Keener. So she's really in good company in that one. I have not seen that one, but it's on my list of things to do. And then the third title actually is horror. It's a title called Haunt, and it was directed by a Mac Carter in 2013, and she plays Sam. So that I have seen, and that's actually a pretty cool film. So anyway, the thing that's notable about these four characters is that they're played so well, and the on-screen chemistry, not only between the two couples, but with the couples together, they just really come to life in a great way. And everything's very believable and real, and is something that you would expect to experience in just everyday life, right? They really sell it and do a wonderful job with this. And it's fun to go along, you know, for that ride. So we'll get more into that, but excellent job by this cast, and the casting was really well done, I thought. The runtime on this movie is 88 minutes. It's pretty sharp, but it feels quick. And so next I'm going to get into basically, and that's one of the things I wanted to say real quick is that, because this movie is like brand new and it's exclusive on Shudder, and I'll get more into that too. What I wanted to do is make sure that, you guys have time to seek this one out if it's in your wheelhouse of something that you'd like to do. And, I just wanted to give you enough information and not get too far into a full review, and that I'm going to give away like any spoilers or any of the scares or endings or any of that sort of thing. So I didn't want to ruin it for anybody, for those that want to go, you know, check this one out and enjoy it. So basically, my role in this one is to give you a good overview of the movie, but not too much, and then get into some of the aspects that really worked for me and that I thought were pretty notable, and that hopefully that gives you enough information to go on, that you can take and formulate your, like, whether you want to seek this one out or not. And hopefully it is one that you do. It's worth checking out. So moving into some of the aspects then that I really enjoyed about this film. This movie is an alchemy of many genre-specific criteria I love, being that it's Lovecraftian, which is also always checking my box. It's aquatic horror, which I get really excited about because we don't get a lot of that, or it doesn't seem like we get enough of that, you know? It wields these very cool creatures, and I'll speak more on that part of it, but I love monsters. I love creatures. I'm a creature guy. So it's part echo horror also, which is really pretty neat. It's, again, part love letter to the 1950s era science fiction, which I've always enjoyed, which was specifically noted by the director, Jeffrey A. Brown. And it's part parasitic invasion. And I love that genre, that type of film. It's always resonated with me. It's always something that's really piqued my interest. And it gets quite apocalyptic, actually. And it's quite dark and moody. You know, so there's that. It also boasts some pretty hardcore, pretty gnarly body horror. Like, it's rough, the body horror in this one. And so that was something that caught me more by surprise than I thought it was going to. And I really enjoyed that. And it gets kind of gross in parts, really. So something to keep an eye out for. But yeah, like, well-rounded. This, as far as this type of genre type movie, it really checks a lot of my boxes. It's really my jam. So I enjoyed this one immensely. And those were a lot of the varying aspects of criteria that were really notable to me. Specifically, a notable influence on the director, and not surprisingly, one of the main influences on this movie was Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And you have that done in 56, the original. 1978 is my favorite version of that film, and then the 93 version. But the 78 version was directed by Philip Kaufman, and he does such a remarkable job. And it's a highlight reel of cast members. You got Leonard Nimoy casted in it, Donald Sutherland, Brooke Adams, young Jeff Goldblum. So it's a classic. I love that film so much. It's definitely, it's up there in my top movies, top horror movies of all time. So other notable movies that did play a pretty heavy influence on this as well, that was noted by the director, was a title called Shivers, 1975. There's another one that I haven't seen. It's A Light Crazy, done in 2011. He also notes the title Alien, the original, 1979, obviously. And that had a big influence, I think, really on obviously the creatures in this film. And it's not a direct ripoff of any sort. The creatures in this movie are definitely their own thing, and they're very unique looking. But they have that feel, you know, and it's quite cool that, you know, I can definitely see it where he's coming from with the way that they're designed. It's very neat. So, and then the last influence that he had noted was the Quatermass experiment done in 1955. So this film follows similarly in line then with titles such as The Mist and Long Weekend, in my opinion. And it really feels like a hybrid of like The Mist meets Invasions of the Body Snatchers, mixed in with a little bit of Alien creature, you know. So if that gives you a better context. So then in this film, we're presented a highly respectable sci-fi horror hybrid love child, really ramped up and ready to swallow us whole in its dread. I mean, this thing gets pretty gritty, and in doing so, it really gets it right. You know, this one builds ever so slowly from the opening scene into this very moody and abstractly eerie atmospheric nightmare. At times I felt really mesmerized by the visuals. They're so well done. But it felt really untrustworthy in its landscapes, right? So it's like this weird hypnotic dream state that kind of lulls you into this false sense of wonderment. And then ever so slowly, you kind of uncover that this progressive disclosure that you're trapped in this worst type of nightmare. And by the time you realize it, though, obviously it's too late. It's got you. And then it goes. But one of the aspects that I really appreciated in the writing was that Randall and Emily's dynamic was really believable as a couple, right? It's obvious that there are fairly serious issues underlying in the relationship, and that they're attempting to sort these out. So, you know, there's really a solid amount of dysfunction there between the two from the start. But you can tell that they really care for one another, and they got a pretty solid foundation underneath it all, in their back history, and they're trying to work things out. And really, I was pretty invested in wanting to, you know, root them on, and I was kind of hoping that they would, right? The boyfriend's a little prickly in this one, and he's a little hard to take in spots. He's going through one of those phases, it seems like. So, you know, whatever. Relationships are hard, right? So I don't know. But the cool thing is that they're not presented in a way that's already so toxic that you can't buy in, which is really important, because, you know, if you can't buy in, there's not going to be any stakes, and then we're not going to have a payoff at the end of this thing. And so why do we care to take the journey in the first place, right? So it really starts with that. And I was glad it was done in a way that was tasteful, and it was real. It felt real. Like something that, you know, we've probably experienced in our life or whatever. So the film has a pretty slow burn to it, which I feel like some viewers might get a little bit impatient about. But, you know, so it's not set to deliver this constant adrenaline-fueled run right off, from the open. But I think that the director's really smart about how the script was written by having the storyline take its time. It's intentional. It gives us plenty of exposure to the young couple before anything else is introduced so that we really know them and we're investing in that first before anything else, you know, comes along in the way of a distraction or something contextually that we have to add on to, right? So there's that. But fairly early thereafter, though, the young couple are enjoying the house when Emily realizes that there's another couple that is taking residence there as well for very different reasons. So, you know, there's this weird little sidestep. But the film, I feel like the film could have went a different way at this point, which I think would have been really cool too. I think it would have really made for some fun, gnarly horror in of itself. If it would have stuck to that storyline. However, I was really glad that the story evolved with turning these two couples into like a really enjoyable and rather satisfying alliance, rather than trying to be pitting them against each other for the remainder of the film, right? So, and we get to see them hanging out, and the chemistry there, like I was stating before, is really, really good. It's really excellent. And it makes the film's adrenaline run post-infection all the better, right? And it's really smart for doing that, I think, because that just kind of adds into us further entrenching into the storyline. So regarding the two couples' chemistry, there's a point where they're all having dinner together that first night, and Jane asks Emily what she's studying in college. And Emily responds that she's studying organic chemistry at the moment. She is a chemistry major, and she further establishes her interest in graduate school by the way of astrobiology, you know, at the University of Washington. So this kind of pins everybody back a bit. And, you know, is very impressive, obviously. And so this piques the interest, most of all, of Mitch, who goes on to have her further elaborate more about what the hell astrobiology even is. So Emily then kind of fills in the gaps quite eloquently, which is to say her dialogue, it's not throwaway dialogue, and it's not filler. This was all written very well, and which is the point. But it comes through in this intimate moment between the four over dinner, hitting exactly at the main artery of the storyline, meaning that, you know, Emily states that astrobiology has more to do with life on this planet as opposed to other planets, right? And it's more about how organisms can adapt to extreme environments that we wouldn't be able to ordinarily survive in. Obviously, it's a point where chemistry becomes biology, somewhere at the bottom of the ocean, they think. Life is so fragile, and we are the right combination of elements, the right temperature, the right distance from the sun, and this measure of time spent developing and changing over billions of years. One thing that's slightly off and we'd be nothing. We'd be like dust or gas or something. I'm in all of it. And that's where she kind of wraps up her dialogue there. And it's this really neat, like, rich moment between them all. And it's a great moment foreshadowing kind of what's hanging out there, what is to come, and how it is to come, and how it is to be, right? So, I don't know. It's really intimate, and it's a really neat scene on screen that they share there through all of that. And I was really kind of taken aback by the writing. I thought it was quite good. So anyway, with the direction of Brown and his effects team, they really do lend beautiful visuals on screen. When the infection hits the coast, some of the abstract sections in the movie are absolutely stunning. They're so cool to look at. And I wish I knew how they created those effects. But after dinner, for instance, there's some innocent extracurricular drug use that's introduced for the four. And that kind of segues into these beautifully infected, altered landscapes, right? So what they realize, they're kind of moving about the house and getting settled in for the night and, you know, just kind of visiting and getting to know each other a little bit better. And so there's a moment between a couple of the characters where they're out on the porch, and then they notice the way that the surrounding environments changed very drastically, actually. And, you know, and then it kind of goes from there. So it's kind of like everybody's in awe of what it is and a little unsure about what it is, and it seems so foreign. So it goes from there. But while that's in parallel to that, then you have this segue with the drug use, where it gets really trippy. And the effects that they did to kind of put that on screen, and you kind of feel woozy with it, it's really wild. I was pretty impressed with the effects that they did on that. And then it starts, you know, the characters start sliding into that trip, and that's when the landscape starts getting a little bit more unsettling and a little bit more creepy and a little less trustworthy. And then it goes from there as the infection intensifies. So outside of that, you know, the film is supported by really great practical effects throughout. I was impressed by how uniquely horrifying the monsters were, for instance, in the story through their various stages of development. They're sold extremely well, and they're really believable and real, the way it's all portrayed, which is really hard to do, actually, with what this is. So, you know, for example, there's a specific shot that I really like that was taken down from the water's edge at the beach there, where you're introduced to these very real-looking fleshy pods that really are incrementally lined down the beach. And I took one look, and it just, like, this wave of dread kind of went over me, and I was like, what depths did those derive from? I absolutely do not want anything to do with that, right? So it's like, I'm glad I'm sitting in this chair and I'm enjoying it, watching it on the screen, because this really isn't going to end well for any of these characters. But it's so cool the way it was shot and done, and what these things look like. So there's that. As the film ramps up, the creep factor post-infection, and after that's been introduced, there's these long shots throughout the beach house with varying amounts of character interaction that get really quite uncomfortable and claustrophobic. You know, basically, they've been breathing the air, they've been very close to the outside environment and what's been ongoing. And so there's varying degrees of infection taking hold, and, you know, it starts affecting some of the characters differently. And then, you know, so everybody's trying to get a grip on what is really going on in this environment, to how is this affecting us, because it is. And it gets really unwieldy from there and kind of off kilter. So basically, there's sections of the house that feel extremely tight, and that really plays into the dread of the action that starts to hit between some of the characters, and that really got me very anxious. Yeah, you can really feel how tight everything is, and it was shot intentionally that way. It was well done, so I thought that was quite cool. So anyway, that was neat. The film portrays the infection and the monster's evolution as the story progresses, which again, like I was saying, feels really real. And we get our first experiences with the body horror aspects of the movie then. And the film doesn't just ease into it. It fully embraces the chaos and jumps in with both feet directly into the madness. It's actually really, it's really tough to watch. It's really hard to take. I mean, it's equal parts upsetting and disturbing. I don't know, it gets bonkers. So, you know, So taking a step back from that, though, it keeps the film feeling freshly nuanced for what it is, in that there's this evolution to the infection and to what's going on with the characters and everything. And it, you know, what you do get a sense of is that it's very unpredictable, and that is creating all the turmoil and tension, right? And the chaos for these characters. It is a nightmare, and they can't get out of it, right? So, and I have to say too, I'm really impressed with the restraint shown not to over-explain through long-winded exposés, you know, dissecting this impending infection through the coast, right? So I really appreciate him for writing it in a way that, you know, we get enough breadcrumbs to certainly track through what's happening, and it stays really on course that way. And we can use our own creativity and our imagination as to where that's going to go. But it really lends well to just letting the movie take its course with all the action and all the chaos that ensues. And it suits it quite well that way. You know, we don't get real choppy with all these long-winded explanations or verbiage about what might be. You know, it plays quite nice that way. So I did appreciate it for that too. In all of this too, we have this film score done by Raleigh Porter, and he was the composer. He's out of the UK. He's also actually credited for a film score titled In Fear, 2013. But this film score really is effective at just crushing us with these jarring blasts of sound once we're warmed up to this impending infection, right? And the dread that's created. It really puts an exclamation point on the sense that we're headed down this path with our main characters, and that's completely bonkers and out of control, right? We're way off the tracks. So this world is quite literally falling apart in every way, and we are tethered to this train wreck. And it gets you, you know, it just kind of needles away at you at this different angle in making you super anxious and uncomfortable. You know, it's just another way that this thing's kind of drilling at you. So there's that, and it's really effective in what it's there for. So, the direction also was quite brave in my opinion, and that the storyline was unapologetically dark and apocalyptic. I mean, it's kind of brutal. So, and once it heads this way, it really doesn't let up. I mean, it's pretty unrelenting. So we're all in on doom and gloom, right? So buckle up, right? You know, so, I don't know. It's quite wild. So anyway, that was a summary of what really worked for me and resonated throughout this film, and made it pretty special. So I guess I'll segue then into my overall recommendation. As far as the rewatchability factor goes, I would say for me personally, it was quite high. Again, it checks quite literally all my boxes for this type of genre film, you know, and I really enjoyed it. So rewatchability, it's something that is going to be on my radar, and I'm going to be watching periodically and enjoy, you know, the second and third and whatever showings. In that, you know, the environment's really pretty rich too. I feel like there was a lot, you're so wrapped up into the chaos of what's happening at, you know, as this thing gets going and really starts taking over, that, you know, there's so much detail that I'm interested in checking out in the rewatches. So I'm excited for that. But I mean, even if this isn't like necessarily your jam, I'd still say it's a moderate rewatchability factor. So there's that. As far as the fun factor of this movie goes, I would say it's also high. You know, for me, you've got really great creatures. It's a really wild infection type film. It's very apocalyptic. You have these really well written and well acted characters, and there's a good nucleus with solid chemistry. And it really makes it a lot of fun. And you know, the special effects are great, and it's just a neat ride, you know. So for all the criteria that I mentioned before, and I won't do a full repeat, I really think that this film has a lot to offer in the way that it is a lot of fun. And as far as, like, you know, the tension and dread of the film, I would say that is also high. There were so many aspects, just in the relationship dynamics and the body horror and the chaos and everything evolving the way it did with the infection. It just, like, I was super anxious, and I was really uncomfortable through a lot of those parts. It was pretty fun. So I would say that's high. As far as the scare factor goes, there's not a lot of jump scares in this one, so I would say that's pretty low. But as far as the psychology of it goes, I mean, obviously, this is a very timely movie in that, you know, we're going through what we are, our current climate. And so, yeah, it plays with you. And as far as that goes, yeah, it's quite high. So all told, I would say that this is definitely SLTH approved wholeheartedly. So I would definitely recommend checking this one out, you know. I think this is really well done. So overall, this is a really impressive directorial debut by Jeffrey A. Brown. And I'm very excited to see what comes next for him. So where you can view this film, again, this is a Shudder original, and it is viewable, streamable on Shudder. So that's where we need to go for it. There is no physical release currently at the time of this recording. So I would say, really, to wrap up the episode then, hopefully you've enjoyed episode 2. If you've not done so, please feel free to subscribe to the show and share this with friends and family you know. Definitely, that'd be a huge help. A positive review will always help the show up tremendously. It helps get the show out there to more people. Separately, you can find the show via social media on Twitter at SLTH_podcast, on Instagram at SLTH.podcast. You can also track the show via Patreon website at patreon.com. All right, everybody. Well, again, I'd like to thank you for joining me on episode 2. Please take care of yourself. I'm looking forward to getting the next week's episode out. So more content is coming your way, and I will talk with you then.